It says that she is a gaunt, black-haired glamour ghoul who comes out through ominous...
You're still afraid.
Stop it now, I mean it.
You know how people exaggerate.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Goes this with,
stop it! More. You're in...
Barbara?
Oh yeah, how is everyone out there tonight? I'm your host Poxy Leonard here with Miss Reagan, and you're tuned into The Ghost of Hollywood on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Recently, Reagan and I had worked together on a program that aired briefly during the summer called War Pigs Arcade. And although that format didn't survive, we've spent the past few weeks writing a new program, and well, here it is.
Are you going to overcompensate all night, or can we move on with our lives?
Well, I thought there should be, like, some sort of explanation. I mean...
You mean you're concerned that someone actually cares about anything you write anyway? Yeah?
I mean, tough words, Ray, but you stuck around, didn't you?
Someone had to help you get through things here anyway. Let's get the show on the road, Poxy.
All right. Make it rain.
Watch it pour, Poxy. Tonight, Poxy and I put together... A macabre of chaotic entertainment to pass the next 2 hours by as we watch the TikTok on the clock. Wait, what? TikTok on the clock?
What?
You shouldn't be allowed to write script programs anymore.
Step back. Kindergarten criminal on the clock.
Zip it for a second, Poxy. Alright, as I was trying to say earlier before Mother Goose over here took over the script like Kathy Bates on James Caan's knees. That we have a ton of good stuff in store for you tonight. Poxy and I will be discussing the 1951.
You can do it. Yeah. You can do it.
I can get through this. RKO horror classic, The Thing from Another World.
Taking it back here a bit, aren't we? I mean, anytime RKO comes up, I'm ready to let loose on a little bit of cinema history. Yeah.
Chill, Poxy. You can splurge about Howard Hawks all you want in a few minutes.
Yeah, all right. The thing from Another World is a fun one, though. I mean, old James Arnaz coming to get you, baby.
Hold the phone. Here comes Poxy with some boomer jokes about Gunsmoke.
All I'm saying is look out, Matt Dillon is coming for you, baby.
Are you done yet?
Yeah, sure. Maybe I'll just mix my next drink and let you take it over for a while.
Well, I've been trying to open the show for like 10 minutes now.
Well, you said it yourself. You drop a film like The Thing from Another World, and I've got plenty to say about it. All right, well, maybe we could become like an educational program somehow, you know?
We have an odd way of being informative.
Well, there's a reason people sleep in class, but anyway, let's get on with it. Our DJ, Matt C., has decided to stay on board and has plenty of spooky music to hype up the holiday. Well, you know, Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reagan and I have plenty of useless news, call-in game shows, and banter on the 1951 film, The Thing from Another World, starring James Arnaz, also well known as Matt Dillon and Gunsmoke.
Jesus.
You know what's funny is upstairs, like, I was on, Smoke Break earlier, and Franco's asleep, and Gunsmoke was on, and I was like, well, this is weird. As soon as I read the program.
That's just weird.
No, irony.
Ironic.
Yeah, you gotta love a little meat TV, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to The Ghost of Hollywood right here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, streaming all around the world at KBOO.FM. Just type it in your browser and hit play. What's up, wall crawlers? Can't get enough of The Ghost of Hollywood? Then check out our website at theghostofhollywoodpodcast.com for complete access to our entire first season, featuring movies such as Class of 99, Polyester, Trancers, Space Avenger, Children of the Corn, Tough Turf, and more. Each episode is packed with all kinds of great film history told by the movie makers themselves, so be sure to check it out now.
Local to Portland, listen in late night from 3 to 5:30 a.m. every other Friday on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, or stream the show live from the station's website at kboo.fm. Stay tuned, because we'll be back with more from The Ghost of Hollywood.
Oh yeah, Halloween dance tunes, baby. Everybody getting wild around the cauldron. Wait, you're not gonna dance with me?
No, like, where would I? There's like 5 square feet in here.
I mean, the listeners don't know that. Come on, use your imagination. Hang on, let's turn up the tunes. Ready? Here we go. Oh yeah.
Funky.
It's not even Halloween music, but whatever.
Yeah. Now, what happened to the soundtrack from A Thing from Another World?
I like this better. It flows better.
Whatever.
All right. Well, let's get back to business here. Where were we before we took a break to jam some tunes?
Well, we were talking about Dewey Martin being married to Peggy Lee, but that wasn't really leading up to anything. That's just my favorite topic.
Oh, it's your favorite topic.
Yes.
What is that? Is that the topic? Dewey Martin being married to Peggy Lee? Or you just like
everything.
Peggy Lee?
All right, yes.
Everything Peggy Lee, yeah.
Yes.
Well, let's jump in somewhere. Do you remember The Day the Earth Stood Still, yeah? The other 1951 sci-fi thing, movie, yeah?
Yeah. No, Poxy, I've never heard of the Beatles either.
Yeah, just checking.
What about it anyway?
Well, it also came out in 51, and it had sort of like, you know, this... I don't know. I had this hunch that it outperformed The Thing from Another World, just kind of because it felt like, to me, watching it in today's world, kind of had a bigger picture to it, you know? Like, it was a little more serious. But, you know, it really didn't outperform The Thing from Another World at all, actually, so.
Yeah, that's a toss-up for sure, looking back on both films. Which one do you like more?
Well, The Day the Earth Stood Still definitely sends a pretty big message to anyone who was watching it. And The Thing from Another World, I mean, it's a plant-based monster that has vampiric dependencies and is destroyed by electroshock.
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 Yes. You know, at the end, after they kill the thing, his remains remind me of one of those dust piles that the Security Council was turned into in the 60s Batman movie.
Batman, hurry! We need you to send the super molecular dust separator to the Arctic Circle in 1951.
Most of The Thing from Another World was actually filmed in Montana.
You know, this isn't here, but I was actually reading, you know, because I'd miswritten something in my notes earlier about Antarctica, but they changed it to the Arctic Circle instead of Antarctica, so they flipped poles in the film from the book. Kind of weird fact, right? Anyway,
yeah.
Thought that was strange. But where'd they film it at in Montana?
At Glacier Park.
All right, I knew it was somewhere. I couldn't remember. Anyway, look out. It's the Super Carrot from Glacier Park.
Super Carrot?
You remember when they described the thing as a super carrot? I mean, remember that?
I guess that validates Arne's opinion of his costume.
Seriously, though, did they really shoot the entire film in Glacier Park?
No, they actually shot some of it inside of an ice storage plant in L.A. It was actually filmed in the same deep freeze studio as Lost Horizon.
Maybe that's where Friedkin got his idea for filming those, like, really cold scenes towards the end of The Exorcist. Deep freeze studio stuff.
Didn't he, like, fire guns off on the set and stuff?
He what?
I swear, I remember reading somewhere that Ellen Burstyn said he fired off guns to startle people. You know, get him in character.
Oh, yeah. The old 70s Mavericks. What a time it was to be a commercial filmmaker.
More like what a time to start a finance class on how to manage large production budgets.
Oh, the execs would have liked you then, I think.
Come on, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, think about how outrageous things got during the apocalypse now.
Yeah, but I mean, still, the film was successful.
All right, I've got another example.
All right, let's hear it.
Shimino's Heaven's Gate.
Oh, okay. All right, you win. That one got out of control. You're right. Budgets. But he was coming off Deer Hunter. I mean, you know.
Still, though, I stand by the Coppola example.
The Coppola example. Martin Sheen's doctor at the time may have agreed with you. You know, bringing up Coppola right after Friedkin basically has you, like, ripping on the whole director's company. Act like it's a huge company, but, like, you brought up Bogdanovich, we brought up Friedkin, now we brought up Coppola, you know, we're moving on here.
Don't even get me started on Daisy Miller and the Conversation.
You don't like the Conversation?
I thought it was pretty boring. Hackman peaked with French Connection.
Yeah, so did Friedkin.
Debatable, still.
You gonna give me the old Star Wars got in the way sort of game?
Hey, Sorcerer was a great film, just like really bad timing for its release.
I think Director's Company actually kind of like passed on the script for Star Wars, to be honest.
I mean, I'm sure the script read pretty silly. It's obvious phenomena, things went the way they did.
Yeah, but I mean, according to like, I don't know, I mean... Think about an actor reading Star Wars back in the cities. Like, damn, who let Kurosawa on the loose of West, you know, on the set of Westworld? I mean, it seemed like you're saying, it's I feel like Charlie Sheen passed up on the role of, whatever the kid's name that Johnny Depp ended up playing in the first Freddy Krueger film, Nightmare on Elm Street, because he was like, this is ridiculous. In hindsight, turned out to be a successful film, but I guess if you're reading, you know, the script about, like, some, like, creepy-ass pedophile dude who's, like, wrecking your dreams and killing you in a sweater vest, or not a sweater vest, but a red and green sweater with claws, you're like, I don't know, this script might be debatable to my career, so I could see the Star Wars thing going that way, but saying it's phenomenon, it's most definitely a pretty accurate description, so, you know.
Does that work?
I mean, maybe I'm reaching.
I think you're reaching.
You think they were reaching when they decided to go set the thing on fire?
There's a lot to that scene, actually.
Like what?
Well, for starters, the entire scene is lit purely by fire, which you have to admit is pretty unique.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely redeeming. I always thought that setting the thing on fire seemed a bit counterproductive.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, burning down the only structure you have to survive in during an Arctic blizzard seems like a bad idea.
I'm sure you have plenty to say about the end of Carpenter's remake.
Oh, man, my song's over. Hang on. Yeah. Oh, I got another one. Let's keep jamming. Here we go.
Nice.
Here we go. No, wait. What were you saying again? You said something about, Carpenter's remake. At the end of Carpenter's remake. No. The destruction works at the end of Carpenter's remake. It's just a totally different kind of scenario.
Why?
Because anyone in their right mind would have done whatever it took to escape that thing in the film.
That thing?
Sorry, the 80s thing is way more terrifying than the 50s thing. It also didn't underscore the elements written in the book. Who goes there? By that, I'm talking like the 51 version did.
Yeah.
You know, where the thing is like able to invade bodies and duplicate. You know, Carpenter went through with all that, which was kind of cool, so.
It's all about time and place, Poxy. Hux had the script work over half a dozen times before they are able to put together something suitable.
Whatever. I mean, send the 80s version back in time and see how it fares.
Touche. Wait a second, though. Back to the scene with the fire.
What now?
Tom Steele was a stuntman for that scene, and the whole fire stunt thing was pretty new.
Well, what went wrong then?
What do you mean, what went wrong?
Something always goes wrong with the fire scenes.
Well, actually, nothing went wrong, but everything could've.
Why?
Well, there was a fiberglass helmet made for...
Oh, yeah, the one that was made from the asbestos tubes. It had, like, breathing attached to it. And I had read about this, you know. I read that that could have burned Steele's nostrils pretty badly, you know. This is all coming back to me now. You know, it just dawned on me that Tom Steele was actually in Citizen Kane.
Yep, he was a reporter that jumped onto the running board of the car. He worked as a stuntman in Hawks 46 film, The Big Sleep.
The Big Sleep. Oh, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. You know... They'd married just like a year before.
Did you know our second husband after Bogart died was Jason Roberts?
That grab-ass dude from, Once Upon a Time in the West?
That's the guy. Their marriage tanked because he drank a lot, but he ended up in a sober in the later years.
Yeah. You know, after he planted his car into the side of the mountain and had his face sewn back on, you know, like, he finally, I guess, had enough, so.
Oh, nasty. Anyway, back to the thing. When we were talking about shooting a location earlier, I forgot to mention the whole ordeal behind the aerial shots of the spaceship submerged in ice.
Oh, you gonna talk about how Hawks and Winchester Company tried to work a deal with the military to use equipment for the film?
Well, actually, no. It's worth noting that it didn't happen because the Air Force wasn't game for endorsing the concept of UFOs.
Mm-hmm. I smell a cover-up.
But what I was going to say was that the winds in Montana blew the snow around every day, so they had to use a snowplow to round it up for some of the takes.
Oh, yeah, you can totally see the snowplow, like, in the classic aerial shot before they land the plane. It's right there at the tip. Like, they're not even trying to hide it from the shot.
Well, they moved the filming to San Fernando Valley and recreated the ice setting with some sort of photo emulsion fluid or something that crystallized in the sun before filming.
San Fernando Valley? Huh. I bet those fools burned alive out there in those costumes.
They sure did, right after freezing to death from the scenes earlier on.
All right. Well, there's a lot to go over here. We're gonna run out of time.
Wanna jump to the end?
Yeah, let's give it a go. Why not? The scenes where they electrocute the thing at the end were actually, they were apparently pretty difficult. RKO brought in someone from their own special effects department, whose name I read earlier and now it's left my mind, to work out the kinks of like the whole shot, you know, of the special effects. The Winchester production crew tried using different size doubles for Arnez to make him seem like he was getting smaller, and that didn't work, so that's when RKO brought in their own special effects department to try and handle the deal.
Arnez is huge in that movie.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's just huge in real life. He's like 6'7" before the makeup, which tacked on like 5 more inches, so he's standing like a solid 7'1" as the thing.
I always read Arnez refused to talk about his role in the film.
I guess. I mean, he must have thought he looked like a carrot, too.
Well, he probably hated it when they revamped the film years later and added lighting to all of his scenes.
Oh, yeah, that definitely drags the fear tacting. Let me just knock my microphone out. Anyway. The fear tacting. The lack of imagery portrays, you know, like... It when they lighten the scenes... In the new cuts. So, for instance, when the film was originally cut, Hawks wanted it really like dark. You know, they didn't want you to be able to see James Arnez.
Yeah.
And they're the thing. So they like took out all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they really like toned down the lighting. Well, when they recut the film later on, it was actually like they lightened it up. So you like the version that you and I watched was definitely relit because you could see everything. And that definitely drags the fear tactic, you know, the lack of imagery portrays, like, right into the dirt, so.
They cut a ton of material. The thing close up and imply a lot in the dialogue.
All right. The overlapping dialogue. You know, George Brenneman, who was well known for his work with Groucho Marx, said he had a hell of a time with the overlapping dialogue.
That sort of dialogue works so well.
It sort of gets you over thinking all the about time, how but when you have to put the entire performance on well times. For it to work.
Did we get it right?
I don't know. I think I need more practice. I messed up.
That's so hard.
All right. Well, let's wrap up things from let's wrap up things from my brain. No, my synapses is wrecking itself here.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's wrap up things. Damn, I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
The thing from another world.
I don't think we did it justice.
You don't? I mean, give it time. We'll get there. A few episodes, and we'll start to tidy it down. Next thing you know, we'll be like true professionals.
Yes.
Anyway.
Right there.
You are listening to The Ghost of Hollywood, brought to you especially by KBOO Community Radio on 90.7 FM and Electric Garden Studio in Portland, Oregon. The Ghost of Hollywood is also available on all streaming platforms, so please like and subscribe to keep the show moving as we gear up for our second season this coming fall.
And if you still can't get enough, follow us on Instagram or check us out on KBOO.FM for all of the latest information and updates on the show. You can also tune in live on KBOO.FM by weekly from 3 a.m. to 5:30 a.m. to catch us on the air in real time.
Stay tuned because you're listening to The Ghost of Hollywood live from the Electric Garden Studio in Portland, Oregon. Well, that about wrap things up here on The Ghost of Hollywood at KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. I'm your host, Foxy Leonard, with Miss Reagan doing our very best to bring you all sorts of Halloween chaos as we gear up for the end of the month. Now that we have secured regular late-night programming, which should begin at 3 a.m. every other Tuesday, hopefully, a go time for that schedule should be announced very soon, so stay tuned.
And try to hang in there with us as we work out a little bit of the programming kinks. The first few episodes usually don't go as smoothly as we like, but everything comes together eventually, you know?
Oh, but it takes so long. Sometimes I just don't have the patience.
Well, then, I suggest you grow a pair, sucker, because we got a lot of work to do.
Oh, fine. Whatever. Stay tuned out there. I was gonna say goodnight, but it's almost daylight now, isn't it?
If you're listening to this live in Portland, Oregon, it is.
All right. Well, that wraps things up for us here. Stay tuned for more scheduled programming on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, your community radio station. What do you want to leave off with, Reagan?
Let's wind things down the right way, Poxy. How about the Pharaohs?
Oh, yeah. Definitely a spooky old tune to send off with. All right, let me turn up those dials. This is Poxy Leonard and Miss Reagan saying so long on the Ghost of Hollywood's Halloween special right here at KBOO 90.7 FM. And we'll see you next time the lights go out. Until then, here's to wishing everyone a happy Halloween.
The Ghost of Hollywood is recorded at the Electric Garden Studio and broadcast live at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Direction provided by Zach Flannery. Writing and program development by Chris Klon, Reagan Flannery, and Zach Flannery. Samples developed by Jesse Garcia. Performances by Reagan Flannery and Zach Flannery. Coordination and communication by Mary Flannery.
For more information on The Ghost of Hollywood, please visit theghostofhollywoodpodcast.com. Copyright held by The Ghost of Hollywood and Electric Garden Studios in Portland, Oregon.